When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to the Leeds Up podcast. I'm James and I'm with Rocco Dean.
Hello.
Oh, it's lovely to see you, Rocco. That smiling face.
And you, of course.
Bloody football, eh? Bloody football.
Wow, roller coaster of a weekend, that wasn't it? My God.
So we're recording just off the back of the Hull Tigers. We mauled those Tigers. So yeah, I think we've first of all recapped a few things. But before we dig into that, special thanks to Bass and Bly, sponsors of the podcast, Justin. Better go straight into David Dean's jingle.
Oh, Bass and Bly and Magic, Justin wears a magic hat. Independent, trusted dealers, you'll hear it on Leeds That. Canon, Nikon, Fuji, Leica, Sony and the rest. If you want a decent camera, Bass and Bly have all the best. 60 years in cameras, we really know our stuff. Justin's here to serve you, he can never do enough. Cameras that you're after, popping for a chat. When at home for footy, Justin listens to Leeds That. Oh, Bass and Bly and Magic, both new and used on view. If you need binoculars, we've plenty of them too. Spotting scopes and lenses, all state of the art. Use Bass and Bly in Harrogate and you'll be very smart. Oh, Bass and Bly and Magic, we don't sell no tat. We are here to serve you. You will hear it on Leeds That. With Rocco and Bielsa, books and James with so much wit. Bass and Bly sells cameras and all the other shit.
Thanks ever so much, David. And don't forget, for all your binoculars, spotting scopes, cameras, lenses, repairs, passport photos, all that sort of stuff, www.bassandbly.com. Passport photos, you'd obviously have to go into their shop, which is at 6 Beulah Street in Harrogate, HG11QQ. Don't know how I remember that, but I do.
I'm not sure you do have to go in the shop, you know. I think it can do you a service, actually, but maybe I won't commit him to that, actually.
He'll ring you in the darkest hours of the day and sort this with you. He probably won't. So yeah, special thanks, Bass and Bly, much appreciated. And yeah, off the back of a win, but the week hasn't been plain and simple. Rocco, you were in Uruguay. No, you weren't. You're in France. Watching Uruguay. How was that?
Oh, God. It feels like about 3 months ago. And it was good. Yeah, it was a bit of a roller coaster. It was a manic 24 hours. Didn't eat a thing between being at Manchester Airport and hardly slept. So it was, quite draining. Took a few days to get over. But it was great, yeah. Made a couple of new friends. John Richardson, Lucy Beaumont's husband, yeah, he was there and had a few pints with him. Lovely bloke. Dan Moylan, who we all know and love from the Square Ball podcast. So it was, great meeting him. So we had, a really good time, apart from the football, which was rubbish. But we were sat, directly behind Bielsa. So, right behind his dugout on the front row. So he was, within shouting distance, and he gave us all a little wave as he trudged off at halftime with his Uruguay team 1-0 down. So that was probably the highlight. But Uruguay lost 2-1, which was disappointing for me because I am full-blown obsessed with them. So as much as it was great to see Bielsa I was a bit disappointed. And it was like, yeah, like the ground was empty because obviously it's, well, they were playing Ivory Coast. So it's like neutral venue, thousands of miles from either nation. And yeah, I think there was a few thousand in there. Nice ground, actually. But yeah, felt very much like a friendly. We didn't see much Bielsa ball. So that was a bit disappointing. But yeah, overall, it was a great trip.
He looks like a better version of Pep Guardiola these days, visually, to look at in his face, doesn't he? What a beautiful man.
I know. I couldn't believe it when I saw that photo of him on the training ground with his beard. But he's shaved his beard off now. So yeah, he looks like himself again, which I prefer. I don't want him to be an imitation of Pep. I want Pep to be an imitation of him, which he is.
And then you came back and we played Watford after the international break and a point gained, maybe?
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. So like I was quite surprised. I'd mentioned about our terrible record on Easter weekend on the last podcast, and then like the stats came out and it was even worse than I remembered. Like 13 defeats out of the last 17 Good Fridays. And yeah, I think we were both a bit concerned about like, yeah, getting knocked out of our stride by the international break. And that seemed to definitely happen. I mean, I thought that game was done. I had no confidence we were going to come back, but yet again, we did. And I think that was a great point.
It was a poor performance. I think there was a lot of people not particularly happy about the selection from the start as well. It felt like the obvious move on paper, looking at it from an outside perspective, was to move Gray into midfield, keep Rodon and Ampadu at centre back, not disrupt that, you know, not disrupt a solid defensive unit that had not conceded in open play since before Christmas, I think it is. So, or certainly before January the 1st of this year. So yeah, that caused a lot of disturbance online. Cooper getting quite a lot of heat off fans on Twitter, which I never agree with. You can have your opinions, but you know, don't lay into the cap.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, yeah, I wasn't happy when I saw the selection, and you think like Shackleton surely should have just been at right back. But, you know, Farke is entitled to his own opinion. He sees them in training. We don't know if Shackleton, you know, who knows, he might have even been carrying a knock. Like, we don't know about Firpo, what condition he was in, et cetera, et cetera. So he's best placed to make the decision. And also, he's an absolute genius. So let's just have to accept it, really. And at the end of the day, obviously Cooper like didn't have a great night, but I don't think he was the reason we played badly. I think there was, yeah, probably 9 other reasons as well. You know, no one really had a good night. Mostly everyone was played below themselves. There was problems in midfield. So Ampadu like really struggled. So yeah, I mean, singling out Cooper is just, you know, I think it's out of order, really.
Yeah, it is out of order. I think the Wales contingency had a very rough emotional week of not making it to the Euros. Couple that with playing a lot of minutes for some of them, you know, going to all the way to extra time. So it's not surprising that it spilled into the camp in terms of a poor performance. And luckily we had Somerville, who's, I mean, he's so good at just cutting in from the left-hand side. He's done that a few times, and yeah, just an unbelievable finish. He, as soon as he hit it, you could tell it was going in. I think Dara put in our group that it sort of bent at the last second, but I was confident as soon as he hit it that it was going to go in.
Yeah, I was actually. Yeah, he tried one like just the same, hadn't he, a few minutes earlier, but there was absolutely no stopping that one. It was a belter. I think it was probably his best goal of the season. I think it must have been. It was like, yeah, world-class finish from a fantastic player, probably the best player in the league, I think. I can't imagine that there's a better one.
The better player in the league would be one who we've rated higher in our player ratings at the start of the season, Rocker.
Yeah, sorry, Rodon.
Yeah. And Joseph, you put goal machine in the notes here, Rocco. He is a bit of a goal machine. And I think he scored within 25 seconds of coming on as a sub in that match. And what a way to come in.
Yeah, and he scored for Spain under 21s midweek as well. So, yeah, the guy's on fire.
Traitor.
Yeah, I feel, I don't know, I want to see him start now, which, you know, it's probably stupid saying that because, like, we're on such incredible form, you know, all these wins, not lost, you know, Bamford's been playing, he's been scoring, he's part of the system. But I don't know, it just feels like we've got a fairly special talent there potentially, and, you know, he could come in and just fuck, it's just like banging goal after goal after goal. So I'd like to just, I don't know, I'd take the risk, to be honest. I don't know what we'd be really missing out on at the moment.
I think we come back to Matteo Joseph because he obviously made an appearance in the Hull game as well. So we will come back to him and discuss him in a bit more detail. Onto the Hull game. Beforehand, Ipswich were just finishing off their game. Everyone was watching in the north stand by the bar to see how that result fared. And it was classic Ipswich, really, wasn't it? What they've done all season, which is score late winners. I think it was 96th, 97th minute they scored. Southampton had someone sent off. And yeah, just like, oh God, this is going to heat the pressure on us going into this game, which I think it did. Well, it definitely did from a fan perspective anyway. I felt incredibly nervous.
Yeah, I did. It was, I mean, yeah, what a way to sort of go into that game. I got in the ground and I was already like emotionally shattered. Although I had been to the Harrogate Town game as well. Like spent 2 hours with my four-year-old on my shoulders watching them, and they scored like 5 goals in the last half hour. So that was like pretty crazy way to go to the Leeds game. And then you had to have to like go through the ringer of watching Ipswich. And yeah, that 97th minute goal. I mean, the whole, I was in the like the fan zone-y bit outside the northeast corner, and yeah, the whole place just like everyone couldn't believe it. When they got the goal, it was a lovely finish, but still an element of luck to it as well. Leif Davis, another bloody assist. You can't stop him, can you? I was especially, it's like even more annoying after like watching them on Friday, and they played badly at Blackburn and somehow ground out a win. Yeah, they just keep chugging away, don't they?
Ipswich are the real deal. I think they're doing consistently. They've performed well. They've got the results all season, and I don't think we can really argue. Well, we can't argue with it anymore. They're doing what they need to do. I was obviously around the family, my wife's side of the family this weekend, who are all from it, which is interesting. One thing I've not said before, actually, though, is my father-in-law is a complete Glory supporter, and that in the 70s he supported Leeds. So he actually is a Leeds fan. So he's like, he's kind of rooting for his hometown of Ipswich, where he's born and bred. But equally, we watched the Watford game, and he was elated when Matteo Joseph scored the equaliser. So I think, like, for me, I kind of want Ipswich and Leeds, well, I want Leeds to go up, but I want Leeds and Ipswich to go up just for harmony in my own life, I think.
Yeah, I know, that'd be perfect for you, definitely. Yeah.
And so going into the whole game as well, we kind of got what we wanted with the selection. So Archie Gray was moved into midfield, Firpo and Byram as left and right back, and Ampadu and Rodon as centre back as well, which was great on paper, really good.
Hull like funny. So I was watching. Well, as I said, I was in the fan zone a bit watching Ipswich, and I checked my phone to see the teams, and obviously like my internet wasn't working, but I did have a message from one of my mates, and he said Cooper's starting. And I told my mate that I was next to him. I said, oh my God, Cooper's starting. Like a dozen people around me all groaned. Turns out, obviously, it was an April Fool's.
And Rocco, what were you just saying before about supporting our team? Anyway, now you're just like openly openly saying how disappointed you are. Cooper being selected. what a horrible human. And yes, selection-wise, it looks good. I think Hull... And I read this in the run-up to the game, actually, one of their players had sort of said, we're going to get loads of possession, and the way it'll go is we will make mistakes, we just will, because we're against Leeds United, and it's a case of if they pounce on those mistakes. And that's kind of how the game went, and they had a lot of possession, didn't really make much of that possession. It was kind of getting into a few, other than their goal, their equaliser, which I'm jumping ahead a little bit, they didn't really sort of lay a glove on us, to be honest. There's a few shots, but none of them were kind of clean cut that really had to stretch Melier as well.
Not really. Yeah, second half especially, there was a fair few where like every single one drew like an ironic ooh from the Leeds fans, like even though, you know, it was like fairly close but never going in. Don't think Melier's made a save all night, has he? But they played really well. Yeah, no question about it. They looked a good side. Yeah, I think the manager afterwards was delighted with them, and Leeds really struggled. It was an awful game really to watch. It was just, yeah, nerve-wracking, and we just didn't really ever get going. Maybe towards the end, I think they started to tire, and we did get on top of them eventually. But yeah, worrying, isn't it? I know we've got like a few days off now before Coventry, but yeah, that was a really difficult weekend. I feel like we've come through it obviously it's out of our hands at the moment, but I feel like we've come through it pretty much unscathed. Like 4 points is a good total, but yeah, we just, I don't know, we need to pick it up again. Ampadu struggled again. I didn't think he played well. Kamara.
Yeah, let's come on to those, because I think we'll probably cover some of it in the ratings, but also as we get a bit further into it. And I think the goal was from Leeds was great, because it was Jorginho doing what he does in picking the ball up in the middle and just barging through players essentially to get it out, to switch play to the left-hand side. And it eventually got out there, ball was pinged in, and Byram, not at first I thought he'd handballed it in from where I was, because I couldn't tell what it had hit. But I saw him in post-match, Popey tweeted that it'd come off his teeth, so it hit him full in the face. Satisfying nonetheless to see it go in the back of the net.
Yeah, well, he started the move as well. He made the tackle that released Georgie. And then, yeah, it was magnificent play from Rutter. And I was hoping he would get the assist. But yeah, keeper made a good save from Somerville. But yeah, it's the determination of Byram as well to get in the box and win that header. There was no way he wasn't gonna get there first. So did really well. And he thought he'd been disallowed, and I thought he'd been disallowed as well. Like, I don't know why specifically, but like, I don't know, it was the way the referee sort of turned and pointed. I don't know, I just thought he'd been disallowed, so I wasn't celebrating, and he clearly looked as bemused as me, but yeah, nothing wrong with it at all, was there? It was a lovely teether into the bottom corner.
Bamford had a open net, didn't he? Or should have scored. It was like a classic Bamford where everyone was like, oh, if we lose this now, because they were obviously had so much possession. So it felt like a real missed opportunity when the ball finally lands to Bamford. But watching the replay, and I can't really tell from watching it back and slowing it down whether it actually gets a clip off their defender and it sort of puts Bamford off. Maybe I'm being kind to him.
Yeah, no, it didn't. I think, I can't remember who it was, whether it was the commentators like speculating that Bamford was sort of waiting for the defender to flick it and then the defender's left it and he's been surprised by that. I mean, there's no excuse in there for Bamford. I mean, not even a top striker. Any striker has to just be there anticipating, you know, expecting the defender to miss it, or, you know, just be ready to pop it into the empty net. So, yeah, he's fluffed that one badly.
They're always the ones for me that are a bit frustrating, where he seems to contemplate it a bit and try and hit it on the inside of his foot rather than just absolutely leathering his laces through it. Like stay on your feet and just absolutely leather it. On his left foot as well, like his favoured foot. So anyway, we won't dwell on that too much.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And Loftus and Kevin Speight, it marked the anniversary of the incident in Istanbul in 2020. I still remember it. We talk about this every season. I still remember the first home match after that, Arsenal, where we lost 4-0. And I remember being in the crowd for the minute silence, and it was horrendous. I was 15 years old at that point, so do some math and work out how old I am now. And yeah, every time we have this every season, I go back to that time in my life and how horrendous it must have been for the families and how horrendous it was for the club in general at that time as well. Yesterday was very well respected by the Hull fans and also the officials. I didn't even realise in the ground, but when we turned away from the football game to clap, Chris and Kevin, that the game had actually stopped. The referee decided to pause it and all the players joined in with clapping, and their manager did as well, which I think was absolutely class. And Hull's handling of it has been really, really good. You know, where in the past we've had kind of taunted chants from their fans and other fans around the country, and it sets an example of times like this. You can separate the rivalry from what are horrific incidents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't realise that the game had stopped either, and yeah, sort of got home and saw the highlights and sort of felt like I'd missed out, really, like missed out on a moment because, yeah, it's really, I mean, it's always emotional anyway. It's emotional just to talk about, but yeah, to see like everyone coming together and, you know, everybody paying the respects. I mean, when it happened at the time, the whole country came together, you know, no doubt about that. There was, yeah, shirts and scarves left all around Elland Road by clubs everywhere. And, you know, it was a real feeling of togetherness and, you know, the atrocities that had happened. But then, in the years since then, obviously, you know, all you really hear about from other fans is, you know, people, you know, making outrageous, you know, horrendous jibes. So, yeah, to be in the ground and, you know, have everybody respect it as it deserves to be. Yeah, really, really emotional. And yeah, like you say, full credit to the ref. I'd be interested to know if it was spontaneous or whether it was pre-arranged. I guess they're probably pre-arranged it. We'd have turned our backs regardless. But yeah, it was a really special moment now looking back. Fair play to them all.
Yeah, that's it. And then play quickly resumed after that. And we were like, Rocco, in your notes here, like I'm cutting from what is like quite a serious moment to conceded playing shit. And that is the reality of it, is that it didn't really feel like we were getting into the game. And probably now is a good point, actually, rather than talking it in the player ratings, where you're talking about players and performance, and particularly in the Watford game as well, where there's a few people off. I think there are a few sort of tired legs. And yesterday it was reported afterwards by Farker that Kamara has been nursing some sort of cold and flu, and he had some painkillers to get through. It was playing whilst he's unwell. Byron basically said he couldn't run after the first half, which doesn't bode well. And Joe Rodon was having back spasms, so was on painkillers for that as well. So coupled with that, with a tight turnaround of matches, international break, like it's kind of, for playing at that level that you expect, you can kind of excuse it a little bit, can't you? And actually, like you say, coming through this side of the weekend with two good results, I think is really, really positive.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually phenomenal, you know, to win that game in those circumstances, you know, with players really struggling, and even Firpo's probably still struggling from all the travel last week and stuff. I just think it's incredible that we ground out that win. I've never known a Leeds team like we have now that, you know, just so conditioned to winning, that have such a steely mentality that can get over the line in these games, you know, regardless of these situations that are facing them. I think it's just amazing. And yeah, maybe that's why, and hopefully they'll be fresher. But they did look, you know, they all look tired. They look like they're coming to the end of the season. And this is going to happen. Like, I know everyone keeps winning and we keep grinding out results, and Ipswich do, and Leicester got back to winning ways. But yeah, it's the end of the season now, and people are tired. The pressure's going to come into it, and it's going to be really difficult, you know, these last few games. I still think we'll do it, but it's going to be a right grind. But yeah, it was a tough watch, wasn't it? I couldn't really put my finger on what the problem was. We just weren't on it. We weren't dominating. We weren't physical as we have in the past. It was, yeah, quite passive for most of the game, wasn't it?
Usually when teams sort of work it out wide and then work it into the middle, we can kind of break them down with pressure, and Gruev's managed to do that like really well. And I'm not saying it's pinned on Gruev, because I think Kamara does that job, you know, with decent effect. But I think when someone is on painkillers and they're not very well, like, how can you try and like make an impact on the game other than just chase it all the time? So hindsight and understanding that, you kind of think, well, yeah, we weren't really making the most of it in midfield. Archie's had to step up into a role that we all want him to play, but there's also pressure in that. And particularly if you're having to carry it against a good side, like Hull are really good, like played some good passing football, and it's probably a lot to ask of Archie. Your next comment, Rocco, you've put Coyle, the C word.
Well, I mean, I was absolutely fuming. I don't know if it was like, I don't know if I was being a bit over the top, but yeah, with him going down with that injury and then getting up and then going down again, And especially because he played for Leeds, I took even greater offence. But actually, like looking back now, and we've seen this a few times with teams that come to Elland Road, like the way they try and like they try and quiet the fans down, but in the end they just like end up sparking it off. And I think him doing that and staying down and all that nonsense, I mean, that certainly got me going again. Like that really riled me, and I was proper like, you know, up for it after that moment. I don't know if that translated to the match itself and the rest of the crowd exactly, but yeah, we see it a lot where. I mean, Hull had us where they wanted us at that point. Like, they were on top. The crowd were quiet. But yeah, I was just like, I was so angry when he went down that second time. And then I think he even tried to go down a third time as well. I just wish, like, why are there no stretchers anymore? Why have they taken stretchers, like, away from football grounds? Just get these players off. It was obviously going off. Ugh, man.
I bet you if stretchers were sponsored by a brand, they'd appear more. So maybe what we need to do is sponsor the Leeds United stretcher.
Yeah.
The Leeds
Bass and Bly stretcher.
Oh, no, but not Bass and Bly, sod then. The Leeds that sponsored stretcher. That's what we need. And it appears...
We invest our Bass and Bly money.
It appears once a game, needlessly, just on the pitch. Or like, you know, like a little golf cart trolley that's got it on the roof or something like that. That'd be good.
Yeah. What about your safe standing bars? Did you have them in? We need to sponsor them, maybe.
Ours is the only section that hasn't had them. So I was walking, I now go in further up the north stand to walk across so I can get like a nice good feeling for the crowd and have a look on the pitch and walk out. And I was like, oh yeah, they all look good, these, don't they? And I got to ours like, where the fucking hell are they? Some bothered installing them. The other thing I noticed on the pitch yesterday, I don't know if you saw this, but I tweeted about it. The sprinklers right by the dugouts. Like, when did they go in there and why?
Yeah, it looked bizarre, didn't it? No idea. Very odd one.
Yeah, that's it. And so, yeah, we're getting into the penalty argument discussion now. But one thing I did notice was Somerville ended up coming a lot deeper to try and get in the game, like in the run-up to this. And he was back in our half, to enable himself to sort of turn towards goal because he wasn't able to turn and run. And in doing that, it kind of pushed power out and then both be able to sort of attack the wing more. And it kind of resulted in with this phase of him dropping a bit deeper into getting into the box, got around the player, and it was an obvious penalty right in front of us, just clipped him. Even if he didn't clip him that hard, it was like enough to warrant him going over. And I think when you're running at pace, you probably do fly over anyway when someone taps your leg. So I think it was
more severe than that, to be honest. I think the guy shoved him on purpose to the floor. I think he was trying to foul him outside the box, realised he'd been done, went in to try and get him before he got into the box. I think it was a full-blown penalty. Well, obviously it was a full-blown penalty. I mean, we've seen him not given, that's the thing. But yeah, fair play to the ref. He didn't bottle that one. And actually made a fantastic decision not giving the Archie one a bit earlier, because I thought I was screaming for a penalty then, but yeah, the whole guy got the ball. So he did well, that referee. Fair play to him.
We're not here to praise referees, Rocker.
Come on, get stuck in.
And the penalty argument, obviously the most controversial thing was Junior Firpo stepping up as the decoy. I mean, it's so obvious he's a decoy, isn't it? He struggles to pick the ball up, let alone kick it from the spot. And then Pirro got it. And to be honest, I saw Pirro go to take it. I thought, well, that's fine because I know that he is designated penalty taker. But I was really nervous about him taking it. I just thought he's not been on the pitch long enough. It was like the classic hallmark of someone coming on and taking a penalty and ballooning it over the bar because they're not warmed up into the game. And then the Somerville sort of stepping in to get the ball off him, didn't like that as well. Didn't. He's just not needed. It just adds a massive amount of pressure to everyone in that situation. You think, oh, well, you know, if Somerville misses this, what would have happened if Pirro had taken it? And yeah, just not needed. I think these are the sort of things. Well, we've had two a bit like this season, haven't we? And we just need to get rid of that quite quickly because it just causes a lot of tension.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I was spitting feathers. I mean, it was so weird as well. Like Somerville waited and almost till the last minute to go and get the ball off Pirro. It was like he was trying to cause the scene. Like, why didn't he just try and get the ball earlier? So for whatever reason he did that, I mean, maybe that helped him. Maybe he needs that extra pressure to be as cool as he was with the penalty. I mean, it's all a bit strange, but I was really unhappy. But to be honest, like you, I also was also thinking that Pirro's gonna miss this. So like, although I wasn't happy with Somerville, in the back of my head I thought, well, you know, he's probably got more chance. And yeah, it was, well, just an amazing penalty, a world-class penalty, like you see from Neymar and Messi. They do it in World Cups. He just, yeah, cool as you like, just stroked it down the middle. It's perfect.
He always waits for the keeper to move, doesn't he? Always. It's so unnerving to watch. I dread the day he takes a penalty against a keeper that just doesn't budge. It'll be terrifying. Which will be the playoff final. So, yeah, Dan James, he had one of those games where it was, he just didn't seem to be making the right runs. There's a bit of miscommunication with him and Byron, like playing searching passes. Ampadu tried to play a few balls through to him and he just wasn't there. Feels like his head's not back to where it was pre the Wales fallout. But yeah, their keeper came up for a corner. They were trying to push for a late equaliser. We broke out. Was it Jorginho pinged it over to him on the right-hand side?
It was Pirou, actually.
So Pirou got the assist. And I think 56.8 yards out, which is what Johnny Cooper reported, which I think is the furthest distance scored by a player this season.
Yeah.
Love random stats like that. And yeah, he absolutely nailed it from where I was in the northwest corner thereabouts. As soon as it left his boot, you could kind of see it sailing. It was marvellous. Yeah, what a moment. Brilliant.
It was just magical. I mean, I said, and my dad said it in the car. I got in the car afterwards because my dad sits in the east stand now because he can't stand up all game. So I got back in the car and I was thinking, like, probably just overexcited, but I was thinking that's the best goal I've ever seen. And I got in the car and the first thing my dad said was, that's the best goal I've ever seen. And I just don't think the TV does it any sort of justice at all. I don't know if it was my angle or what, but he just absolutely pinged that. I mean, to do that in the 97th minute while sprinting with the ball moving, I mean, the technique on that was just phenomenal. And yeah, like to wait and wait. I mean, it seemed to take like a minute before it hit the net. And I had the opposite angle, so I had no idea if it was going in or not. And then to see the net shake was just, yeah, what an unbelievable moment. And I was so happy for him, like emotional, that he'd scored after missing the penalty for Wales. Like you said, he had a difficult night. You know, the whole fans are taunting him all night. I don't know if you noticed, but because it was down my side of the pitch, yeah. You're holding your ears. Yeah. Leeds fans singing, who's the chuffing LEU, the whole stadium, the whole fans. And James is just there holding his ears, facing them. It was just brilliant. Yeah, what an amazing moment. Like, this season has just been unbelievable, and another unbelievable moment to add to what is a collection now, and hopefully the most memorable stuff's to come.
I think it was the injection into Dan James's system that he needed, the perfect sort of antidote to get over that disappointment. And I hope, like, in the next game, you really see him kick on, which I think you will. Like, that's got to do confidence and everything, a world of good. And it puts a lot of grey behind you, doesn't it, as well? So, yeah, lovely stuff. Beautiful. Ratings, I guess. Oh, actually, I will say, when that goal went in, the whole players, a bunch of them, just dropped to the floor as well. They were, like, absolutely gutted. I was like, yes, what a feeling that is. Job done. And what was, like, I put on Twitter, and I probably got the wrong word by saying sort of an undeserved victory, because I think it was just an unconvincing victory of, like, up until the 86th minute, whenever it was, you just didn't feel like we were going to get a result out of that. So it was just brilliant in the end to grind it out. Well, very chuffed.
I think as well, like, we needed that Dan James goal, because, like, after the Ipswich game, winning like they did, like, even to win 2-1, I think everyone would have been delighted, obviously, in the circumstances. You know, it was a late goal anyway that we scored. But, like, yeah, just the way that match ended, like, I mean, I certainly didn't wake up thinking about Ipswich scoring in the 97th minute. I couldn't care less, really. I was just, like, absolutely elated at what happened last night. And I think that was just perfect to hopefully get us fully back on track.
Definitely. Player ratings, Rocco. Should we delve into it?
Yeah, we've got this stupid situation with the two games again. So shall I quickly run through Watford, and then we'll discuss Hull as normal and go from there?
Yeah.
And you pull me up if you need to. So Watford, I've got Melier 6, Gray 7, Rodon 7, Cooper 5, Byron 6, Kamara 6, Ampadu 6, James 6, Somerville 7, Bamford 6, Rutter 6, and I've marked Firpo for a 7. Ah, yeah, that's what I wanted to mention, because nobody else has. Firpo's amazing dummy that set up the goal for Joseph. Like, the presence of mind to do that in the middle of the box like that, thought that was superb.
It was marvellous. And one thing we hadn't talked about is the fact that Georginio Ruta obviously had a hernia and had an operation on it and then came back into the fold. And is it just expected to play at that level again against Watford? Yeah. And you actually think, like, it's remarkable, really. The man had a piece of bulging bowel or whatever it is sticking out of his stomach. And now he's just back playing top, well, as a professional athlete against other footballers, which is pretty amazing. Good lad.
Yeah, absolutely. So no complaints with those ratings then. Move on to Hull.
No, let's go. Unless they favour you and your stupid predictions at the start of the season.
They did actually.
Of course they did.
Anyway, moving swiftly on. So for Hull, Melier, 6, I suppose. Conceded a goal, did nothing else. Can't get a 7, can he?
Fair enough.
Byram, I thought Byram was superb, even if he couldn't sprint second half. I've got him down for an 8.
I'm gonna do this at this moment, actually, Rocco. Man of the match, I'm giving it to Byram. I thought he intercepted. Like, it's easy to give it to Somerville because he did the clinical stuff, but Byram just did the right things all game, intercepted the ball, tackled the men at the right point, just really robust, and obviously got a goal as well. So yeah, Byram for me.
100%. Yeah, we're in agreement, which is rare, really, isn't it? I don't know if we do it on purpose sometimes to choose someone different, but we never really have the same man. But yeah, Byram, 100% for me. He was brilliant.
We hate each other, don't we?
Always at each other's throats. So, Firpo.
Yep.
Rodon, 8. And I did consider changing to Rodon for man of the match, but Byram deserved it. But Rodon at the end, so when they got that corner, when the keeper came up, like I was like shouting, like, Rodon, you've got to win this. And he went right to the edge of the box to win the header from the deep corner and then got back into position, won the next header, and then made the block. Guy's a cheat code. Brilliant.
Yeah, he's awesome. And it's easy to overlook Rodon for the importance of him, but yeah, he does it when it counts. Bless him.
Yeah.
Bless him in his back spasms.
Ampadu, 6.
Ampadu had to do a lot of running out of with possession, didn't he? Because I just think we weren't breaking through midfield. And so he had a game where he was trying different stuff and trying to play through balls. And I think that probably reflects on his rating. But I think he did all the right defensive stuff, didn't he? But it was just that attack.
I think the guy got across him for the goal as well. I think that was his man. I wouldn't say it was a mistake. But I think, 6 is probably a tiny bit harsh, but it works for me. So 6. Kamara, 6. Bit of a struggle, wasn't it? Same for Gray, 6. Didn't think he had a good game at all, to be fair. Some nice things, but... Dan James, I've put him down for an 8 just because of his goal, I suppose. Is that silly? Should give him a 7?
That's a rating. That's a moment rating, is that? I'd give him a 10 based on that moment, Rocker.
That's true.
But I think a 7 is probably fair because, like I said earlier, there's a few moments where he just didn't make the right runs, but he's getting there.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. Who else have we got? Somerville, 7?
I think we kind of have... Do we have to give him an 8? Won Maybe. The penalty, scored the penalty, or is it a 7? I think 7 is probably about right.
I think so.
The overall game.
He struggled to... He struggled to do much until he won us the game, didn't he?
Until he did all the important stuff.
Yeah.
7. Let's be those gits.
Do you?
If you don't like it, email Rocco's dad.
Rutter, 7?
Yeah. He did it. Classic Rutter, magic moments, did wonders for that first goal, but I don't feel like he's fully back to where he was.
No. Just that bit in the first half near you where... He just kept the ball forever. Like, they couldn't tackle him. There's about 5 men around him on the touchline. It's weird, isn't it? Just like, he just never loses the ball. Like, no matter what, it looks like he just always comes out with it.
He must be a nightmare to play against. You'd end up just like kicking lumps out of him and losing free kicks all the time. Anyway,
Yeah. Patrick, got to give him a 5. I thought he was invisible and missed a sitter. Sorry. Yes.
It's fair enough.
And that's it. So concludes the ratings.
Good stuff. And we've done our man of the match, so that's good. And so Coventry next, and the running fixture wise. Well, I mean, I always take a standpoint of being incredibly nervous about this. We've got Coventry, Sunderland, and then Blackburn. Obviously, Coventry's away, and then we've got two home games back to back, which is really good. Leicester have got Birmingham and then Millwall away, Norwich play Ipswich, Carrow Road, which is a massive, massive fixture. Like, if you're not aware, like in terms of that rivalry down there, it's as big as any other local derby in the country. They absolutely hate one another. So anything could happen in that. I think it was a draw earlier on the season when Norwich were well out of form. So as I say, anything could happen. It would be nice if Norwich could get a win down there, I think, and we get something at Coventry. But on that, Rocco, how do you think we fare against Coventry? It's a really difficult game, I think.
Yeah, it is very difficult. Hard to say, isn't it? I think if we turn up and play like we did this weekend, I think we're going to really have a tough afternoon. Obviously, we're capable. I mean, they've got the FA Cup semi-final coming up probably maybe next week. Is it the next game, maybe? I'm not sure, but yeah, I don't think that's going to play any effect on them. I think they'll just be, if anything, it'll galvanise them because, you know, the players are playing for a starting spot at Wembley. They have to win. It's, you know, probably a bigger game for them than the semi-final, potentially. I don't know. So it's going to be really difficult. They're a good side. The crowd will be massively up for it. So it's going to be a big, big test for us. But, you know, I still, like, even if we lose that game, I'll still feel confident, like, and we should do as well. Like, you know, there's still games to go, still going to be twists and turns, but we'll see.
Southampton, are they out of it now?
No, absolutely not. No, I don't think they'll do it, but nah. I mean, for them, they're running. I mean, they've got Leicester and Leeds, which they need those games now. So, you know, it's not in the hands now, but if they win those two games, well, I mean, to be fair, they probably have to win all the games. If they win all eight, they'll get 98 points, which I think would be enough. So yeah, it's highly unlikely, isn't it? But I don't think they're out of it.
I like a lot of their fans put us out of the race very early on in the season. I think it was November time, which came back to haunt them. So I refuse to do it for them because it is the sort of thing that will bite us in the arse. So I'm not doing it. Last point, and I kind of don't want to finish on this, but I also kind of do. You put Calvin ? Rocco. Calvin Phillips was giving the finger on a video. It could have been a deep fake. Who knows? Deep fakes are in now, aren't they? Giving the finger to a fan who called him absolutely useless. I really, really feel for Calvin because, and maybe this is a terrible comparison and someone could pull me up on this if they want, but Calvin going to West Ham to get some game time in a January transfer window when he's not played in a long, long time is probably a big ask. Maybe it's a bit like Weston McKennie when he came to Leeds. And I'm not comparing them weight for weight, pound for pound. It's more the fact that they're both central midfielders that have had to make a move to kind of get their career back or get some games under their belt again. And yeah, it's a bit of a pressure cooker situation for him. And I feel for him. David Moyes did actually stick up for him in an interview yesterday as well, just sort of saying, you know, he's a human being and we need to sort of support him, which I really liked.
Yeah, it's literally is upsetting, isn't it? It's like horrible to see such a nice guy going through such a terrible time, really, for him to do that. I mean, I keep seeing Leeds fans sort of sticking up for him and, like, you know, saying that they like it and stuff. But for me, yeah, I mean, that's like, you don't do that. I don't care about, you know, whether footballers get abuse and all that stuff. Like, you don't swear at your own fans, even if they are on loan. You know, if he did that to us, we'd never forgive it. So, you know, I'm sure Phillips massively regrets it. And it's really sad, really, really sad that he's been driven to that because of such a sad, tough time that he's had. But yeah, I think he needs to come back to Leeds. I'd take him back without a shadow of a doubt. I'd definitely pay 30 million though.
It's all part of his plan. He's just trying to devalue himself so much to get to the point where Leeds are like, oh yeah, we'll pay five million for him. Cheers.
Yeah, exactly. We'll take him off your hands for nothing. Don't worry about it. Yeah,
I think as well, it's so hard. And you do, in incidents like this, you sort of generalize it and think, oh, you know, he's swearing at all the fans. But more often than not, he's not. He's just swearing at one dickhead who's called him a useless whatever. Yeah. And I think sometimes that's fine. Like, you know, I can't
would
remember.
It be though? If it was a Leeds player doing it to a Leeds fan, you'd never say it's fine.
Depends what had been said to them and what the situation was.
Weston McKennie giving us the V's.
Yeah, but there was enough there to warrant. But, oh, let's not get into it. Maybe you're right. I don't know. What do you think? Email Rocco's dad to talk. tell him what you think. Cool. Well, on that, we'll be back after the Coventry game. and another kind of tight couple of fixtures with 4-day gap between the two next week. So yeah, we'll see how we go. Back at Ellen Road next Tuesday night. And yeah, it is really squeaky bum time, isn't it? 6 games left for Leeds, 1 or 2 more for other teams around us. But yeah, can we do it?
There are only three home games left.
I know. Can we do
it? It's mental. Yes, definitely. I'm sticking to my guns. It's going to be Leeds and Leicester. Ipswich, you know, they've done it over 40 games, but can they do it over 46? I don't think so. And the one thing I do think is that they've got Huddersfield on the last day. And Huddersfield won us promotion last time. So I can see them doing it again.
I've got my praying hands out. I really hope we can go up automatics. I cannot take playoffs emotionally and financially. So, right. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening again. And thanks to Basil Black for sponsoring the podcast. We'll catch you all soon. Cheers.
Podcast Network.